Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Our next guest is a singer-songwriter who won a prestigious music competition earlier this year. We've had him on the show before as well. And as a result, he's been in the recording studio, and now his latest single, Burnout, has just been released. And in studio now to tell us more, we have singer-songwriter Andrew Asco. You're very welcome to the show this morning, Andrew.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
And full disclosure, I am Andrew's mom. So
yes.
I mean, full disclosure. And Andrew, you were on back in, was it around this time last year?
Yeah, it was this time last year. I wrote the song in November, and then I think in December I came on and played. Played the song before I headed off to the competition.
So look what happened, man.
Yeah,
this is exciting. Full circle. So you were recently involved in the competition, and it's been a whole year now. I mean, so that's a bit of time. Tell us, first of all, let's go back to the competition. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to enter? Like, what was that all about?
Yeah, so I was going to Seek, which is this massive conference held by Focus. They're a Catholic mission group in the States. And they had this music competition. And I was a little nervous, I guess, to submit anything, because I've never really tried for a competition. I've played some things in cafes and written a few songs, a few ditties, and, you know, I've enjoyed it. Like, I have enjoyed it, but I never took it very seriously.
So it was like a hobby?
Yeah, it was a hobby. And I was like, you know what? I kind of got this call in my heart, and I also got a few texts from my sister and you saying, come on, like,
hey, come
give
on.
It a go.
Yeah. Do it, man. Do it. Just what do you got to lose?
Exactly. So I just gave it a go. I wrote a song. And actually, it was interesting. When I sat down to write the song, I feel like the Lord really stirred in my heart. And it was, it wasn't just like a song to me. It was like a prayer. And it really moved me. So I was like, I actually have to finish this song and submit it and see what happens. So I finished the song up, submitted it. And I went out to the conference in January. And
it was what was that process like? I mean, like you said, you've written the song. There was a lot of competition, I think.
Yeah, no, there were a couple hundred people who submitted to this competition.
Wow.
So it was, I kind of just threw it in like, oh, sure, look, like, if it gets through, great, but I wouldn't be surprised if I didn't even get an email back. But sure enough, I got, like, emails saying that I was in for the competition at the stage, at the conference. So it was, like, it was really exciting to get that news. It was really exciting. But I wasn't entirely expecting it, to be honest. So that made it, I guess,
a lot of good entries.
Oh, yeah, no, there were brilliant musicians there. Like, when I got there to the competition and I heard other people on stage, I was really intimidated. Especially my friend Jackie Minton, my friend Hannah, who also ended up winning. There were four winners in the end, so they were incredible. And Melanie Mitchells, who actually features on my track Burnout, like, they were incredible. And other musicians as well alongside them, my friend Ellen and a few others, they were, I was just like, all right, that's it. Like, I came, I saw, I didn't conquer, but that's fine. They're amazing. And thankfully, though, my song somehow pulled through.
Wow. And tell us about the judging process, because that was kind of exciting.
Yeah, that was exciting. So the initial round, the semifinals, and the earlier part of the competition, we were judged by a panel of four. So there was this, there were a handful of people, including the lead producer and the owner of the record company that recorded the song, Paper Castle Records. They're fantastic, by the way. You should check them out, Paper Castle Records, on Instagram and online. It was a really interesting process, just hearing, like, what people thought of my song, like, from a writing perspective, from a performance perspective.
Yeah, to get that feedback.
Never had that before in such depth, yeah. So that was great. But then the final competition, we had a special judge come out and join them, and it just so happened to be Matt Maher.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. Like, there were 10 of us in the final, and we were, like, all in the backstage, like, praying together and just, like, praying for strength and courage, because, you know, like, it was intimidating, I have to say. So got out there, and it was actually fine once I got up there. And I just played the song and had a quick chat with Matt about the song, and he gave me some pointers. And
So June comes along, and you finally end up in a studio with these three other winners to do the recording. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, June came fast. So once we won, we got to go out to Nashville, Tennessee, and record with Paper Castle Records.
Was that a bit of a dream?
It was a bit of a dream. Yeah, it was really cool, because we got it recorded in this really, like, homey environment. It was this home studio, beautiful, beautiful studio with like plants and all of these old analog sets and everything. So yeah, it was amazing getting to work one-on-one with some professional musicians who really had a great vision for the song and for music in general. And then also getting to see all the winners again. Yeah. Really fun.
I remember you saying at the time, I remember you calling and saying, like, you know, I wrote the song and it's me singing it, but it's like, it's not... It's a collaboration now. Yeah. It's like it's gone to a different level. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no. When you like when I've written things before, it's always been a very like straight kind of linear process of just write the song and then just that's it. Like I just finish the song, that's it. It doesn't really go anywhere. But when I brought it into the studio, all of these different ideas came forward, and the producer had all of these great instrumental ideas and helped me find the correct tempo. That made a massive difference. And then also just the encouragement was amazing. So then when the song came together and we threw like harmonies on as well from Melanie Mitchell, it was just incredible. Like I didn't even, I recognized the song, but it was different. It was completely different. It had this this really like professional and well-rounded sound that I'd never heard before, like from my own music. So looking at it, listening to it, I mean, like I like started this, like it was really exciting. And the type of work that they put into that song made it what it is today. Like I couldn't have done that on my own.
Wow, absolutely.
Couldn't. I can't take the credit entirely for that song.
Well, we're going to play this song in just a minute, but I'd like to finish with you telling us just a little bit about the song. What does it mean to you? Where did the song come from? How did the lyrics affect you, and what do they mean to you?
Yeah, the core meaning of the song is about feeling exhausted spiritually, and just not knowing where God is in your life, and just feeling burnt out. So that's one side of the meaning of burnout. And then the second kind of split meaning to burnout is my heart was at that time as well burning out to know God more and to know God again in a, you know, joyful and more intimate way. And it's about me reaching out to God and asking for that relationship again. So it's kind of like a journey back home. That's what the song's about, is finding God again, finding peace with God.
And what are your hopes for the song, and do you have what are your plans for the future? What are you going to do next?
The initial thing is I just want burnout to reach people who need it. So that's why it's on Spotify, Apple Music and Amazon Music, so you can find it there. I really just want to help people who are in a similar place that I was when I wrote the song. But from there, like music-wise, professionally, I guess I'd like to make a new EP in the new year and just get more of my music out there. I have about 3 or 4 EPs that I've written but haven't actually produced or anything yet. So I'm looking to do an EP next year and a bit of gigging here and there, but nothing's lined up yet. So for now, just find me on Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music.
Excellent. Well, we're going to have a listen to the song here, and I have some texts I'll read out after we play Andrew's song. And so congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done. And looking forward to seeing what happens in the future with all of this. So singer-songwriter Andrew Asco, thanks for coming on. And this is his song. This new song is called Burnout. You can get it on Spotify, iTunes, or Amazon. Let's have a listen.
I don't see you right now, and my heart is breaking down. I need to know your mercy.
It's Saturday Magazine with Jackie, and our next guest is visiting Ireland as the keynote speaker for a conference on home education that is particularly focused on classical education, taking an evidence-led critical thinking approach that teaches the student to think well and master subjects quickly. Our next guest is founder of Mother of Divine Grace School and its curriculum. And then she's in the studio today to tell us more. We have Laura Bequest. Laura, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Happy to be here.
Thanks so much for being here, Laura. Now, first of all, I think people, homeschooling is something that's quite new in Ireland, and people are very curious about it. I'm sure they'd like to know, what led you in the beginning? Like, how far back are we going now, too? People probably want to know how far back the school's been
quite
going. Quite a ways back. Tell us, how long has the school been around, and what led you to found the school?
Yeah, it's interesting. My mom, who's Donna Steichen. She wrote a book called Ungodly Rage, The Hidden Face of Catholic Feminism. She urged me to homeschool when my first child was ready to go to school. She said she just heard about this thing that people did, homeschooling. She wished she'd known about it. She urged me to look into it, but I just didn't think it was possible. I thought I couldn't do it because I was having children, pregnancy, laundry, dishes,
all those other things.
So I thought I couldn't. So instead, with seven other families, I helped found a school. Why I thought that was going to be easier, I can't really tell you, but that's what I thought. And so we started a school, and we had that school going for probably 4 years, but we couldn't afford the third level for my third child, right? I remembered what Mom had said and decided I would homeschool him till we could have more funding. And we had so much fun. I just really loved it. I loved that time with my child. I was so happy I wasn't sending him out, you know? I was just really happy. And then my second child was not happy going to school, and she would cry. Aww. And I thought, what am I doing? She's crying, and I'm having fun at home with my third, John, you know? I thought, I'll just keep her home. So I kept her home, middle of the year, just brought her out of school. And then the three of us were having a really good time. And I did have a toddler, so I realized, oh, you can do this even when you have little kids, you know? So it went so well that the following year, I pulled my oldest out of that little school that we'd started, and we homeschooled. Wow. It's one of the best decisions they ever made. Mm. Then I had 10 years of trying to figure out what's the best curriculum, what actually works with children, found out there are stages of formation. I read Dorothy Sayers' The Lost Tools of Learning. That was very helpful in just seeing that you can't expect the same things of children at different ages. You know, they're ready to do something at one point that they're not ready to do at another. So I worked that out, and then a friend called me up and asked me after 10 years if I would come and speak at a homeschooling conference like we're having on Sunday, right? And I thought, well, I guess. And she said, bring a handout. Okay, I'll bring a handout. So I started, you know, one piece of paper. I thought I'd have kindergarten, first grade, second grade through 12th, because I have, you know, I had a vision for the whole, even though I hadn't done all of it yet. But I couldn't do it. I just had too much to say. So I called up my friend and said, could I have like one piece of paper per grade level? And she said, all right, that's a lot of paper, but I guess. And so then I started that, but it still wasn't enough. My husband came home one day and he said, honey, that's not a handout. That's a book. So that was Designing Your Own Classical Curriculum.
So it is a book.
So it is a book.
People can access that book.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Even now. So I self-published the first. It looked more like a pamphlet. But, you know, I took 100 copies to that conference and sold them all.
Wow.
It was amazing. And then Bethlehem Books picked it up, and then Ignatius Press picked it up, and that's where it is today.
Wow.
So then somebody called me up who had a secular homeschool program, and she said, I've always liked Catholics, and I'd like to, you know, let's meet and talk, and maybe you can write syllabi. But I wasn't willing to just write syllabi because I thought, who knows what's going to happen to this? So I told her that. She was great. She said, well, okay, let's set you up as a separate curricular path within that original secular school, and then eventually we separated.
Yeah.
So that's how we got started.
Wow, wow. And now, how many students do you have enrolled? You have online classes.
Well, you reach globally.
So
I know. It's been so
humble beginnings.
It's very humble beginnings. I was not a business planner. I didn't have, you know, you're supposed to have a 5-year plan, 10-year plan like that. I never did. It was always just like, okay, Lord. You know, somebody, Christina Jagura said to me, Laura, I am not going to homeschool Samson next year unless I have day-by-day lesson plans. And I said, okay, sure, I can do that. So I wrote the first syllabus.
Wow.
Now we have lesson plans for every grade level, every class.
Wow.
It was all like that.
Wow.
That's how it worked.
Wow.
Yeah, so now we have 4,700 students, and we have, internationally.
Yeah.
And we have, synchronous online classes, and we have teacher assistants who will grade work for the students, and we have the daily lesson plans that are available electronically.
So there's all different kinds of levels of support there, right, for the
whatever
families.
Whatever the mom needs, that's my goal, is I want to support people in this fantastic opportunity. Jackie, I am so happy. I cannot tell you how happy I am that I homeschooled my children. They're grown up. You know, my oldest is probably 43, somewhere like that. My baby is 30. I have 14 grandchildren.
Wow.
And I would go back tomorrow.
Yeah. Wow.
I loved it.
Wow. What ages are the curriculum? What ages cover? The curriculum covers?
Cover?
Yeah. How many ages?
We have pre-K through 12th grade.
So all the way through?
All the way through.
So from beginning to end until they go on to university.
That's right.
That's amazing. If you're just joining me now, I'm speaking with Laura Bequest. She's the founder and director of Mother of Divine Grace School. And tell us, Laura, what is it about this approach to education and curriculum that you think is so important? What are the benefits that the families get from it?
I think the most important thing, probably three things. First is that this is a natural approach to education because it follows the natural stages of formation. You pay attention to what children are ready to do, when they're ready to do it, and you work that into their assignments. I think that's important. I think it's important that it's ordered to teaching people how to think. Thinking can be done well or badly, and one can be taught to do it well. And this curriculum is specifically intended to teach people how to think. And then, this is a Catholic program, which means that everything within it is done under the light of the faith. It permeates the curriculum. And because it's a classical formation, it is ordered by its nature, ultimately, to knowing the best and most interesting object of reality, who is God. That's what it's ordered to. Everything we do within the program, you know, you cover all the, you know, science, history, we do all that. But it's seen as preparing your mind, your ability to eventually think well about that highest object. And that is the goal of our life as human persons. So classical education is by its nature ordered to what we are all ordered to. And I think that's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It is really beautiful. Really well articulated as well. The conference is coming up tomorrow. It's nearly sold out. I think there's like 20 tickets left for people who might be interested. What are you planning to speak about tomorrow?
Well, first of all, I'm going to talk about eternal reasons to homeschool. Because we are made for eternity. Jackie, I say this every time. I know you've heard me, but the older I get, the clearer it is to me. This life is really short. Really, however long it is really short. And eternity is really long, like really long. So everything we do in this life has to have in view that eternal orientation. So I think there are eternal reasons to homeschool, and that's what I'm talking about. Now, in that process, I talk about, you know, the questions people always have. Socialization. Are our kids going to be socialized? And, you know, life skills. Are they going to learn life skills? I address that. But the fact is, in my experience, which is now over a number of years and many, many children, is, they get those skills. Mm. They get them better.
Through homeschooling.
Through homeschooling.
Wow, wow. And would you say, I know you're giving two talks. What's your other talk going to be about?
It's about how our program works uniquely. So, you know, there are other homeschooling programs, and God bless them, right? I think that having parents have their children at home so that they're the ones raising them, they're the ones forming them, I think that's natural and intended. I think it's Pius XI in On the Christian Education of Youth, says parents educate their children at home until they can't. That's always been the understanding within the Catholic Church. That point comes at different places for different families, right? You do this as long as you can, and then you do it, you turn that over to somebody who will do what you would do if you could. I think there are various educational venues. Yeah. So that second talk is just going to be explaining ours.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on today and explaining. I know it's just the tip of the iceberg because there's so much underneath all of what you said as well, but thank you so much for coming on today. Really do appreciate it. We've been speaking to Laura Bequest. She's the founder and director of Mother of Divine Grace School. There's a conference happening tomorrow. It's taking place in the Creedham Center in Leopardstown in South County, Dublin, tomorrow, the 10th of November. It begins, registration is at 8:30, and it goes on until 5 in the afternoon. There are some tickets. I think there's about 20 to 25 tickets left on Eventbrite. You can go to eventbrite.com, and it's Mother of Divine Grace Home Education Conference, Modge Home Conference there on their site. If you want more information about Mother Divine Grace School and the curriculum, you can visit modg.org. That's modg.org, or go to eventbrite.com if you're interested in tickets for the conference.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.